You know, you feel like you know people, even though you really have not maybe met them a couple of times, but you have this connection with people. And then, you know, I've followed his work for a long time, David Twitchell, a fair amount of time now. And I love the fact that he does a show and he does interviews and he brings in all different types of people, usually relating to UFO topics, something we both obviously have a strong connection to. And so David is from Detroit, and he actually came to Upper Michigan a couple of years ago, I think. He came up and visited me. David, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you, TJ?
Great. So did you enjoy your trip when you came up here?
Well, I'll tell you, I never want to see a tree again as long as I live.
I remember you said that initially, but then you said, oh, it wasn't so bad. I really enjoyed being on the lake, driving along the lake.
I did. I enjoyed the trip, but there's just a lot of
it's
trees
a long,
in Upper Michigan.
It's a long drive. What did you think about being in the country? I mean, you're a city boy. You've been a city boy your whole life, right?
Oh, yeah, basically. But, I had cousins that lived on a farm, and it's a great place to visit.
It's not your thing, though. Not as much
not
your thing.
My thing.
Okay.
No.
Well, it was nice to see you. And, you know, I just was thinking about you, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go hold of David, and we're going to talk about some different things. First of all, the passing of Jim Mars. He, you know, I know he's a lot of on conspiracy things like that, but also he contributed a fair amount to Ancient Aliens, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Well, any conspiracy, anything like that he was into. Now, did he go too far on some things? I don't know. I mean, you know,
a skeptic can
look at the UFO phenomenon and say that's going too far, you know?
And you can probably do that with just about anything. And there are people out there, truly, that are paid. I believe there are people, David, that are paid to deliberately make you look bad. They're paid to give out disinformation. So when you start speaking a truth, maybe... they will come out and deliberately attack you. So I think there's a fair amount of that going on, too.
Yeah, and there are people out there that are just putting out some fantastic stories, so fantastic, and then coming behind it and disproving those theories so that people will throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, it must all be nothing but bunk.
Right, absolutely. So you talked to Jim Mars. When did you interview him?
Oh, I would have to look that up, but it wasn't too long ago.
Well, we don't know. Need to know the exact time. But
I'm going to tell you exactly. February the 7th of this year.
Amazing how you know these things.
Yeah, I know. It just comes to me in my mind and my computer.
So what were you talking to Jim about back then?
We were talking about, he wanted me to hype this book. The publisher sent me a copy of it. Let's see. First of all, we talked about the crossfire, the plot that killed Kennedy. And I can't remember the name of the book.
Because he was one also that kind of inspired... The who was the author that wrote the JFK or the right? He was the one that kind of inspired the JFK movie.
Right, JFK. Yeah, I'll give you the blurb here. Jim Mars is an author and journalist since 1980. Jim has been a freelance writer, author, and public relations consultant. Jim's 1992 nonfiction bestseller, Crossfire: The Plot That Killed Kennedy, received critical acclaim and became the basis for the Oliver Stone film JFK. Mr. Mars served as chief consultant for both of these films, screenplay and production. Jim has written several books to include the in-depth investigation of UFOs entitled Alien Agenda, and has become the top-selling nonfiction UFO book in the world.
Hmm.
He is
even doing better
character.
Than David Twitchell? I find that hard.
Even better. Even better.
I find that hard to believe.
He is an award-winning journalist and lists both in Who's Who in the World and Who's Who in America. So all. That was my February show.
So I guess, you know, I like the fact that Jim seemed to, you know, whether people believe what he was digging at or not, I still like the fact that he was asking questions and he was seeking answers. And then also with his connection to UFOs and aliens, do you know if Jim ever experienced anything like that in his life?
I believe he said, and of course I asked him, and he said no. He said no, but he, you know, believed that this is going on, because like many people in ufology who have not witnessed UFOs, they just realize that there's just too much evidence out there. There's too many people. Millions of people can't all be liars and crazy people.
Right. There's so many people, yourself included, and that's what's kind of cool about it, is that you're a host that witnessed your whole family really witnessed it back in 1962, and that's what really got you started, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And they took David aboard, but then they thought he was kind of subpar, I guess. I don't know if you want to
use subpar.
Yeah. Like not grade A. You know, if you look like grading chicken eggs, he would be like a C. Just kidding. No. But your sister got taken aboard, and we've talked about this in previous shows. And she got visited many times after that throughout her life.
Oh, yeah.
And you never felt that they've come back and visited you again.
No, as I've said, she would recall the prelude to an abduction and the aftermath, and that is generally what people, abductees, will experience. They'll see the craft in the sky, and then boom, the next thing they know, it's moving away, or, you know, and it's 2 hours later, or they'll experience the aftermath, in other words, of the abduction. But there's that chunk of time that is missing for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I have not had that experience.
So they just kind of didn't want you.
They just didn't want you. I say I didn't have that experience other than that one time in 62.
And you didn't know about it. You had a. She was the one that told you, right? You didn't remember any of it, right?
Well, she recalled it under hypnosis.
But you have no recollection of being on board a ship.
No, although I did have either dreams or memories back then of being in a round room, going up a round backless staircase. And that's another thing. My sister is afraid of backless staircases. And why? I don't know. But I had this dream back then, or memory, whichever it was, of a round backless staircase, a spiral backless staircase, and a walking past these small people who I saw on a grill, a long grill, making hamburgers.
What?
Yeah, and this was a screen memory, I believe. It was these small grays at a control board.
So they weren't making hamburgers.
They weren't making hamburgers.
I don't remember any abductees talking about grays making hamburgers.
But you have heard of abductees talking about four-foot owls.
Right.
And several deer staring at them.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. Now, logic will tell you that there are no four-foot owls. And yet they will swear, oh, there was this four-foot owl standing there.
Right, exactly. And he was making a hamburger. It was incredible.
He was making a hamburger, yeah.
And,
so this is what the dream was, okay? So
right.
the dream took something that I saw and fantasized it.
So you could accept it probably better, right? Or maybe even they put that in your head. Maybe they made you think, okay, you're going to remember it as this. You know,
because
I'm sure you've talked to a lot of abductees over the years that you've done your show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they all kind of, some of them will say, because I've talked to a few in my time, and some of them will say it appeared as something else, and it's almost like they were given that thought so it wouldn't be so tough on them to deal with. So
Well, that's what my sister realized under hypnosis. is that you know, the veil was taken away under hypnosis, and she remembered me being let off, and she remembered herself being let off secondly, and being examined.
Was she afraid when she started to realize what was going on under hypnosis? Did that scare her?
She seemed to be apprehensive, but not, you know, the hypnotist told her, you know, you are just observing this, you know.
Did she describe the, because we've never really talked about this, did she describe the incident as being something that was frightening, or an incident that she...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was frightening.
Never want to go through again? I mean, did she resent this the rest of her life? Was it something she lived in fear over?
She doesn't. No, she doesn't. And that kind of startled me, but that she wouldn't be afraid of it. But she's very accepting of it. And she's a very Christian person. And yet she's very accepting of this. I mean, it's just more of God's creatures, you know?
And does she think in some way that she's helping them? Did she ever come to the conclusion that maybe she had a child that was, you know, interbred between her and this other race? She felt that way?
She was told that. And she was pregnant at one point. Doctor told her she was pregnant, and come back in 3 months, we'll check again with, you know, prenatal care. And when she did, well, she just wasn't pregnant.
First trimester?
First trimester. And she had a quote-unquote dream that that she saw this fetus in a sink. Now, even if you have a miscarriage, people generally who have a miscarriage have to have a D&C.
Mm-hmm.
She did not have a D&C after that. But even the doctor called in another doctor to say, you know, am I crazy? She was pregnant. Now she's not. And she doesn't need a DMC. She's just not pregnant. So.
And your sister is still around today, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, is she older or younger than you?
She's 3 years older.
Oh, okay. And do you talk about this from time to time still with her
daughter? Oh, yeah. Well, she, we didn't for many years because... She had several experiences that she just wrote off as one of those things, you know? And, well, I can't explain it, and there's no such thing as flying saucers and alien abductions, so we won't even consider it. In other words, like so many abductees, like the night that we had this experience, we saw the craft coming out of the sky and hovering over our neighborhood, and then boom, it's gone, right?
No, were there other were there other people outside in the street watching this? Just your family?
Just my family, yeah.
Okay.
And it, so many times you hear this, it seemed like time stood still. You couldn't hear the crickets anymore. We heard crickets all constantly, all night long. And it just kind of put you to sleep, you know, at night.
Right.
And we're outside, and there's no sound whatsoever. No sound from the craft, no sound from the crickets. It's like we were in another time zone.
And did you, and we've talked about this before, but I just kind of love bringing this stuff up again. And I always get a little more out of you. It's funny how, you know, I don't ask the right questions, and it's neat that I can maybe dig a little more because it's fascinating. But were the reports... I think you told me there were reports in the paper the next day of people seeing this. And some people would say, well, this is Detroit. It's a pretty populated area. How could people not witness this? And you were the one, I think, that got me to connect with Marilyn Rubin. And Marilyn Rubin had told me that they switch you on and they switch you off. So that you will have, some people will see it if they want you to, and other ones will not.
Right, that's right, and I was told by, I don't know how these people from MUFON would know, but they were speculating, I guess, that we weren't supposed to see it. I was going off to bed, and I looked through the window and saw this billowing smoke with the shimmering green lights behind it, and this was the onset of it, And so I called my parents' attention to it, and we went outside to watch this craft emerge from a pinhole in the sky. And it was a perfectly clear summer sky, you know, to begin with. Now it's filled with smoke, not clouds, smoke.
Do you find that there's, because your story is kind of unusual with the smoke, and you felt they were just coming, they were ripping through time and coming from another place, a dimension like opening a door. But do you hear a lot of stories where people, you've talked to a lot of people, where people have had smoke, where they've seen smoke before a UFO showed up?
I have not, but I have read about it, and I think, Doctor, help me here from...
Spock.
No. Dr. Spock.
No? Not him?
Well, I can't remember his name now.
Wrote a book
on Harvard University.
Okay. Doctor from Harvard University. Don't know. Sorry. Don't know that.
Okay. One. At any rate, he wrote a book, and he was killed by a car in England. Terrible, but I can't remember. Okay, so anyway, he has interviewed people who have seen similar things, and David Kaywood, who's now deceased, was an abductee. He wrote a book with Landy Mellis entitled "The Other Sky," and this is where the witnesses have seen the sky open, and they see another sky on the other side. It's like another dimension, and yes, that's where they're coming from, is this other dimension, another, wherever they're leaving, be it another dimension or another planet, they fold time and space, they fold space and leave their place in time and arrive at ours virtually instantaneously.
Yeah.
And he said, well, can't help happen. But physics has proven that can happen.
Yeah, we're getting maybe close to figuring that out. Or maybe we already know. We just, you know, the public doesn't know.
We don't have a handle on it, you know.
Maybe, you know, there are some that speculate that we have spaceships and we've traveled outside of the solar system, or at least to the end of it. And so I don't know, maybe there's some truth in that. We, you know, we don't always see the technology till many years later, if we ever even do see it. It's eventually comes out to the public in some way. So I've heard the stories that we have much more advanced ships than what we let on.
Oh yeah. I think so.
And so we may have been traveling to other places as well. But maybe I still believe that whoever's coming to visit us, they've had a huge head start. So we're still quite a ways behind.
Oh, yeah.
So
we are.
We were going to talk about, and Jim Martz, rest his soul. I just like the fact that he brought forward, I did read part of his book, Rule by Conspiracy, or Rule by Secrecy, I think it was, Rule by Secrecy. And I thought it was interesting. But I also like the fact that he was a contributor to Ancient Aliens. I really enjoy that show most of the time. You and I have talked about this before, but they want to think everything is alien. And, you know, I know that angels exist, and I know that spirit beings exist. And so they want to attribute even angels as being aliens. And it's like, not everything's an alien. You and I have said that. Not everything's an alien.
Right.
And, of course, David wrote a book called The Jesus UFO Connection. So he kind of believes aliens were evolved in the time of Jesus, which I believe as well. Some people might think, what? And it seems to make sense that we've had these visitors that have been coming here, some to help us and some maybe have been to enslave us or control us. Is that kind of how you've put it together, Dave?
To begin with, yeah, I believe, while I'm thinking of it, John Mack is the man I'm,
okay.
John of Harvard Mack. University is the one I'm referring to. And, what was your question again? I think they've been here.
Some have been here working with us, and some have been here to control. And so there's kind of been a battle of the two. I don't know if it's been a physical battle, but there's been some kind of... I think there have been those that have been trying to help us, and I think there have been those that have been basically enslaving us.
I think religious canon of all religions, Orthodox religions, have talked about that war in the sky between good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible and the Mahabharata in India.
Especially India, right?
The Vimanas. Well, they're more open about it, that and reincarnation, you know. And they're more open about it. And, you know, that's the way it is, so let's tell it the way it is, mm-hmm. not the way the government wants to control it. So.
Well, and then also you wonder then, well, why have they stopped fighting? What happened? Who won and who's around us? And, you know, I think the best way I can understand it is that there probably was a battle. There's been many battles for the control of this planet. But what I see is that the Federation, similar to the Federation on Star Trek, were the winners. You know, or at least they've kept the other ones at bay. Maybe they're still around in some way. But
I think the latter, yeah.
But they truly are making a difference as far as, and it's a group of many different races that are keeping us from destroying ourselves. And I look to, I don't know if this incident with North Korea has anything to do with that, but all of a sudden Kim Jong-un, for some reason, is backing down. And he sounded like he was going to push the button completely. And I know in the past, and you can back me up on this, David, and we'll get to talking about somebody that you're familiar with, Robert Jacobs' Disclosure Project, in a moment, but they have stepped in, and they have shut down our silos, whoever they is. And I think they're doing it for our own good, really. I don't think they're worried about us being a threat. I think they're worried about us destroying ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that your take on that as well? Because you've studied that as well.
Yes. Yes. I had Captain Robert Salas, retired Captain Robert Salas, on my show before. And he's part of the Disclosure Project. And he's spoken out many times, radio, TV, Disclosure Project, in front of the press. He was at Maelstrom Air Force Base in 67, and it was a launch control facility. And a UFO comes over. Of course, he was underground, like 60 feet underground. And he gets this call from the gate. there's this red-orange huge object hovering over the gate. And you know, what is he going to do? You know, he says, keep an eye on it. And after a while, you know, I think, I guess they had like 10 missiles that were ready to launch in case of a nuclear strike. Seven or eight of them went down, went to a no-go condition. And they wouldn't have fired if they needed to, which, you know, on occasion they might have something wrong with one of them. They have to fix it, but not seven or eight. They're all independent. They're all independent. One goes down, it's not going to affect the other one. And this was at Oscar Flight, which is in Great Falls, Montana, and about 60 miles away. At Echo Flight, same thing happened. Short time, I think it was the same day or the next day, they lost all 10 of their nuclear weapons. They all went down. They were tracked on radar. They were seen by very nervous military personnel. And they figured that it was some kind of electromagnetic field. That's the only thing they could figure out, was an electromagnetic field was the cause of this. Well, there's a lot of evidence to indicate, to suggest at least, that these craft, their propulsion system is electromagnetic.
Hmm.
So in the presence of, you know, because cars have shut down in the... close proximity of UFOs, electrical electrical things, lighting, you know. We've had blackouts because of UFOs affecting our electrical grid.
Oh, yeah.
So this is what happened there. And I think they were telling us then, and this not only happened in America. After the Cold War, some of the evidence came out that Russia had the same thing. It's happened in nuclear bases all over the world.
Right.
Where UFOs have hovered over their nuclear weapons and turned them off, shut them down, put them in no-go condition. And the only thing you can derive from that scenario is they're telling us something. We can stop you,
mm-hmm.
and we will stop you. If you go to destroy each other, we will stop you.
Yeah, and in a way that's really good news, because there's too many people that are a little trigger happy out there in the world, and so you think about and you hope that is the case, that somebody is going to step in and stop us from, because I think they would have probably done it a long time ago. You know, there's just too many egos out there and negative energy, a dark energy that wants that to come forward. So I think,
especially with President, what's this button for, you know?
I'm not going to go there, but I'll say this much. I'll say, I think that Star Trek, the original Star Trek series, and even the other ones, really kind of were drawing on some great truths when they talked about their prime directive not being to interfere with other races. But then there were moments in that show where they would step in to maybe keep somebody from destroying, or keeping two cultures from destroying themselves. So that's kind of the same. It seems like that's the same thing that these beings, whoever they are, and I've heard many different, some people say Syrians, Arcturians, Pleiadians, somehow the Greys may be connected, although they tend to be more, it seems like they're kind of neutral. Some people have said the Greys are not the good guys, or not.
Right.
How do you feel about the Greys?
Well, you might have known that I've written a book called A New Heaven, A New Earth.
Oh, yes, that's right. I remember
and
that.
It's a science fiction book, but it's kind of like the UFO phenomenon from the alien's point of view. And in that book, at least, the Greys were pretty much neutral. They're being used by the tall Greys. The small Greys are being used by the tall Greys. And the small Greys are they're clones.
Okay.
They're clones and being used by they're being cloned by the tall Greys. At any rate, they are neutral. And some people say, well, they're mean. Well, of course, if you're abducted by a small Grey, you're going to say, well, they're mean. You know, they've abducted me. They're poking and prodding. They're examining me, and I'm becoming pregnant, and then the baby's gone. And they'd have a negative point of view. And yet there's a lot of evidence to show that they're on our side.
You know, and that's, remember Bud Hopkins? What did you think of Bud? I know towards the end some people kind of ran him down, but he did a lot of research about that, didn't he?
A lot of research, yeah.
And
yeah.
It seemed like he came to the same conclusion that you're coming to right there.
Well, I thought that Bud Hopkins pretty much thought that the Greys are not the good guys.
Oh, really? Is that what the conclusion? See, I haven't read anything from him recently. I read stuff years ago that Bud, when he would do the hypnosis and bring people back, that most people would come to almost be grateful for the experience. But I haven't read any of his material in years. I think I read one of his early books. So Bud kind of saw that maybe. You know, I told you about my experience in 1992. When I saw that Grey, because I asked for it to come forward, and he showed up in the room, and I woke up, and this, whatever, it was 4 feet tall, big eyes, And I just remember going to sleep that night for whatever reason, David, thinking, oh, I want to meet one of them. I would like to see one. I kept thinking that. And then I woke up middle of the night, and some people might think it's a dream, but it was very vivid. And I looked over at this little thing, and it just kind of moved from one side of the bed to the other. And I thought, God, I hope it doesn't get any closer. And I started panicking. And then I noticed I couldn't move, and I was having trouble breathing because I was too frightened, not because anything. It's like he made me freeze, like I couldn't move physically, and that kind of bothered me. And then there was the thought that hit me that he won't hurt you as long as you don't want to hurt him. And
all right.
I thought, well, no, I just wanted to see him. And when the minute I sent that thought back, I could start moving my arms, my head, and my upper chest, and I felt a heck of a lot better. And then the next thing I know, I was out. And I woke up at 9 or 10 in the morning on a Saturday. And for the longest time, I thought, well, it's got to be a dream. But it was so lifelike. And then I realized, if you don't wake up from a dream right away, I know for me, I'm not going to remember. It's not going to be vivid like that. I've got to wake up right after the dream in order to remember. If I wake way early in the morning. So that made me believe. And then I have some friends that are gifted psychic people, and they told me, yes, you did really have, because you asked for it. You asked for it, and so I had the gray that I experienced was a gentle being that had no intention. It could have done anything it wanted to me. When you think about it, it's like, oh yeah,
sure.
He could have had his way with me if he wanted. But I, as far as I know, maybe I don't know this part, David. As far as I know, nothing like that happened. And I just felt this was a very intelligent being, but also a compassionate being, very advanced being, you know, was kind of what I took away from it.
Right. Right. I think you're entirely right on that. They are what it appears to the abductee or the contactee, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if they're you're afraid of this being, then they're the bad guy. And if you're not, then they're the good guy.
You know, I talked to a man, I don't know if you ever talked to, I'm trying to think of his name, is it Jim? He's from Canada. He's written abduction book, probably one of the most well-known abduction cases in Canada. It was in 1987, I believe. He was taken from a truck stop on Highway 1, and it was a full truck stop, and he remembers vividly being pulled out of his car. Now, there's things he didn't remember, being on board the ship, but under hypnosis, he said these people, he cried when they left because it was like family to him.
Mm-hmm.
And they sat and revealed, answered all of his questions, and he realized that not only were they taking him for maybe procreation, but also to teach him some things for a future date. I've heard from more than one person that said there's going to be a time they're going to land, and some people are going to be ambassadors. Have you heard that kind of thing?
Yes, all types of scenarios that this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Of course, I've heard a lot about Y2K and the world's coming to an end.
So you don't know if the part of that part, you think that maybe they're misleading people, or is that possible? Possible.
Yeah.
See, it's like some people are giving information. They're coding their DNA. They're actually changing it for when a day comes. And you and I, this was going to be one of the questions. Will there be disclosure? And if there will be, well, I got to believe there will be at some point. When will it happen? And your response to that would be what, Dave?
I always say disclosure is going to come when ET decides disclosure is going to come. They're going to make it known on no uncertain terms, and it's not going to happen before that because our governments are not going to. They're afraid.
They're afraid.
They're afraid of the backlash. They're afraid because they've lied so long.
Yeah.
So compounded lies. They've killed people.
Mm.
They've killed people to keep this secret.
Mm-hmm.
And all this going to come out, and how is it going to have egg on their face? There are going to be lawsuits, and they're going to be told by the public, look, they are entering our airspace with impunity. They are abducting us with impunity, experimenting on us, using us as guinea pigs. And you are under constitutional obligation to prevent this. Now, prevent it. And their response will be, and the only response that there can be is, sorry, but we can't. We have no idea how to stop it. And how are they going to look?
Yeah. And, you know, some have also claimed that there was an agreement. They gave us, Philip Corso talked about it, that there was an agreement. I don't know if he talked about that, that we allowed them, not like we could stop them, but we allowed them to take people, and in return, they would give us technology. And they kind of gave us their junk technology. They didn't give us their best stuff, but we would figure it out over time because they didn't trust us. They knew that we probably would use it for bad things. So you've heard that theory as well, that there's been an agreement to allow, the government allows people to be taken in all these countries, and in return we get technology given to us.
I have heard that, yeah. I don't know how much, how true that is, it is highly possible.
You know, since we're talking about different things, I've always wanted to ask you this, too. Now, I've been hearing more and more that Hitler recovered a crashed disc and was on the verge. You know, he had hinted around that they had a secret weapon that they were going to unleash. And it looked like they were experimenting with something like that. What do you know about that? Have you heard anything about that?
Probably as much as you do. The bell.
Okay.
The bell.
All right.
The bell is what they were experimenting with.
Do you think that they had maybe some technology from a disc?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think all major countries, I think Russia has the same technologies. I think these craft have crashed in Russia, U.S., Germany, you name it. And there's been a crash in Mexico, and at least one that pretty much believes it has happened. And the United States rushed in, grabbed that thing, and took it back.
Hmm.
You know, and but from what I understand, the Mexican authorities that were at the scene were all dead.
Really?
Dead from radiation poisoning or whatever, because they got too close to the craft. So we came in with our hazard suits and took the craft and took it back to the United States. God knows what we have undercover, you know?
What about these secret bases? Do you believe that there are those bases in parts of the country? Is there one in New Mexico, I think, they talk about?
Yeah, Dulce, that's in, where is that? Back to the computer.
Isn't that in New Mexico? Is that the one in New Mexico?
No.
Okay.
No.
There's, obviously, Nevada has bases, maybe Arizona, just the more remote places where there's not a lot of people, where they've put these different locations, and people have witnessed things near them, so...
Oh, yeah, they witnessed them. What are you going to do, you know?
Nothing.
Dulce is in New Mexico, yes.
Thank you. Who's the UFO expert? Who's the UFO expert?
You are, Mr. TJ.
You are.
You are.
You are. I don't know nearly, because I haven't...
I know you are, but what am I? One of those deals.
But, you know, that's why I turned to you, because you've studied this, and you've had so many people on about it over the years. And you've just talked to, you know, and I'm sure you've formed your own opinion. You've written, how many books now have you written, Dave?
Well, I wrote two nonfiction and one fiction and co-authored one with Major George Filer, retired Major George Filer, who I am going to interview next month, and he will be on my show. October, first Tuesday of October at 1 p.m. on WHFR.FM. And there's the shameless plug there.
too bad there's no website. If I wanted to, you know, go listen to it on a website, that's unfortunate.
Well, there would be a website like WHFR.FM.
Oh. Interesting.
And as or you can go to my website, which is ufoimplications.com. And
yeah, but I want to listen to the really old stuff that goes back. It's too bad you don't archive that, huh?
Well, I do archive that. But then you knew that. Are you messing with me, TJ?
No, not at all. Not in any way.
Never. Go to ufoimplications.com and click on We Are Not Alone. And you have all kinds of archive shows free. You don't have to pay for it. I'm not coast to coast.
I am going to post that video you sent me. What was the man's name? Robert Jacobs?
Robert Jacobs. And Professor Robert Jacobs from Bradley University, yeah.
And he has firsthand knowledge because he was a witness, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, back in the 60s, 64, he was at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and they were out in Big Sur, a tracking site in Big Sur, California. And they had they were testing a ballistic missile, an Atlas missile. And they had a telescope and cameras and videotaping this thing, and of course, Jacobs had just the naked eye, so all they could see was the missile's exhaust going up, and this thing was 11,000 to 14,000 miles up. I'm sorry, 11,000 to 14,000 miles per hour it was going. It was like 60 miles up. Okay.
Okay.
60 miles up, and. So that's all they could see. But 2 days afterward, the major called him into his office, and there were two or three guys. He found out later, three guys in suits, gray suits, not black suits.
Okay.
Were there and had a projector set up, and they showed him a video of this. Missile, and the missile's going along, and all of a sudden, this disc-shaped object comes into frame and shoots a beam of light at the head. Of course, there's no warhead on it, but they were just testing the missile, and it shoots a beam of light at it. Goes around, shoots another beam of light at it, following this thing as it's traveling. Shoots four different. Beams of light at it, and the warhead just tumbles out of the sky.
Hmm.
And the major says to him, "You guys screwing around out there?" "No, sir." And he says, "What do you think this is?" He says, "Sir, looks like we've got a UFO." And he tells him, "Don't you ever say that again. I don't want this. Never happened."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And don't ever speak of it again.
You know, it's funny because what you're saying, and some people might go, "Oh, I don't know if I believe that." You know, I have a friend who told me he was stationed at... It's so cool when you can get it from people you know, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Because they're not trying to... and not that I doubt that this man, this professor, but this friend of mine who is in radio, he's been out of radio for a little while now, but... He told me when he was in the military, he was stationed in Greenland, I believe. They have a base there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Air base. And it's kind of like the one that keeps an eye on the Soviets or the Russians. It's like one mm-hmm. of the big ones there. He told me, he said, he spotted something come in on radar going 10,000 miles an hour, and it stopped, and then it made a right turn, and it took off. And he went and told his commanding officer, and the guy told him, "You didn't see it. You're never going to talk about it. That's the end of it." And obviously he kept his mouth shut because you don't want to do that, right? And now how many others have probably been exposed to those kind of things?
It's like the old Sergeant Schultz. I see nothing.
I know nothing.
I know nothing.
So anything else you want to tell me, David? We're going to wrap it up in a moment. Go to his website if you want to check out all the shows. Who are some of the people you talk to, Dave?
Oh, my goodness. over the years I talked to. Oh, well, my the feather in my cap was having talked to Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Yeah, the astronaut. Huh? He believed in UFOs, didn't he?
Yeah, he claims he never saw one, but he believes, you know, we're not alone in the universe. And I've talked to Paul Stonehill, Paula Harris, and
pretty much
Captain Salas. Now, he was at Maelstrom Air Force Base. So
it's pretty much anybody that's been a player over the years.
Oh, yeah. Peter Robbins.
You even talked to everybody saw the movie. What the heck was his name? The Fire in the Sky.
Travis Walton.
That's pretty cool that you got to talk to him. And those of you that didn't hear that interview when he, and you can go to his website, I'm sure, and find it in your archives. But you said Travis said it was really, it's not what happened. The movie is not even close to what happened, is it?
According to him, there's only a couple things that were off on that. What happened on the craft?
Right.
They were not mean to him like the movie portrayed.
Right.
And when he woke up and they put him back on the side of the road, he was fully dressed. He wasn't naked like the movie had him.
Right.
He says, other than that, it was pretty much
all the stuff leading up to it, but the part about his interaction with the beings.
Right. It's not true at all.
And he said they brought him on board because they were concerned because he was caught in their tractor or something, or when they were leaving, they were concerned about him being.
Well, they didn't tell him that, but he deduced that that's what the case was, that he just got too close to the craft and the electromagnetic shock knocked him out. So instead of leaving him there, they took him aboard and nursed him back to health.
And the cool thing about it, because this is not in the movie, and this just tells you how Hollywood has an agenda, and you should never completely believe anything you see.
Right, right.
Is that he ran? He woke up and he saw the grays over him, right? I remember you telling me this. And he ran into the hall or somewhere, and there was a human-looking person. And didn't he go, oh, you're not going to believe this, blah, blah, blah. We got to get out of here, something like that.
Yeah. And he thought he could help him, and so the guy didn't say anything to him, just led him into this room where there. Now, this is kind of silly of the guy to do this. A control panel, and start playing with the knobs, and he could see the Earth in the distance. He could see the stars and everything. He realized he was in outer space, and he started messing with the knobs, and his view changed. So he was steering the ship. So they came in and said, "Knock it off," put him back to sleep, and then he found himself on the side of the road.
Yeah. And, you know, if you just, even that part would have been pretty cool to put in a movie, but, you know, they're going to try to make it as dramatic. And I think there's also an agenda to turn, especially the little grays, which you and I think are not out to hurt us, but I think they almost want to make it seem like they are. I think Hollywood tries to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
And that, and to me, I look at it as, and I don't know if you've probably heard this theory before as well, there was a time they wanted to collapse all the governments of the world and make it seem like we're being attacked by alien beings, and they were going to blame it on them. And this is what these movies were kind of propaganda. I look at the movie like Signs from Mel Gibson as a good example of their propaganda to try to. I thought it was so stupid. No offense to Mel Gibson, anybody in the movie, but to think that they're going to come down and physically battle with us when they are so far superior to us. It would be over in an instant.
We wouldn't be having this conversation.
It would be over. And even Independence Day, I mean, I like the movie, but we're going to rally and go up there with our jet fighters? No. I don't
Good
think
for
so.
Us. Because we're so much more intelligent than them and far advanced and Come on.
Well, we had Bill Pullman on our side. I think he was the president. The guy that played the president. So that helped. And then we had that one guy that was from Jurassic Park that was in there. So that helped too. And the guy from the guy from Taxi was in there playing the father. So yeah, it was. We had all the right people. And then of course
all the right actors were in there. Yeah.
You know, I like the movies like that. They make you think a little bit. But somebody said also that Hollywood has been, in some ways, trying to tell us the truth. And I look at movies like Close Encounters, which I think is a much more accurate portrayal.
Yes.
Do you feel that way, too?
Yes. And did you hear that they're re-releasing that movie?
Oh, I love that movie. I don't know what it is about it, but I just love that.
They're re-releasing it in theaters.
I think there's so much truth to it. They even said when they filmed that movie that UFOs actually did show up. I heard reports that UFOs did show up while they were filming that. And, you know, it just, to me, rings so true to what people have witnessed and experienced. I mean, not finding the ship in the desert. There are things within it that are movie thing. But it was such a positive spin on our connection with beings that have probably been interacting with us for thousands of years. And this one author believes might even had something to do with Jesus. There's this crazy guy I know. I don't know if you know heard of him, but he thinks somehow no, I think you're pretty accurate on that. I think they had to be involved with a lot of things. So,
there's a connection with everything. Yeah. That's a good place to start, is understanding that there's a connection for everything in the universe.
Absolutely. So, David, I thank you for your time. Is there anything else you want to add today?
No. Visit my website, UFOimplications.com.
Go buy several of his books. Buy him, buy more than one. Give him out as presents.
They're really, I was going to say, give him as gifts.
They're really good books. I've read a few of them, and I like them a lot. So,
thank you.
David, my brother, thank you very much. And you have a wonderful day.
You too.